Welcome to another edition of Stokes and Folks. I'm joined today with the new executive director. I think that's your title, right? Executive director of Better Boundaries. So welcome, Katie Wright, to Stokes and Folks.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I think a lot of people know that redistricting occurs, the census occurs every 10 years, and then redistricting follows. And redistricting is actually a really, really big deal for every citizen of the state of Utah. And several years ago, a referendum was run, and then since the legislature negotiated for an independent commission. But I think there's a lot of confusion between an independent commission versus the legislative committee. So maybe you could explain what the differences are between the independent commission and the committee and why they're two separate things.
Yes, that's great. That is very confusing to the average Utahan, I would imagine. So we have a legislative redistricting committee. It is made up of 20 legislators, 15 Republicans, and 5 Democrats. And they are ultimately responsible, the whole legislators are ultimately responsible for adopting district maps. And there's 4 maps: congressional map, state house, and state senate, and then the state school board map. And then we have an independent redistricting commission, which is made up of 7 people, all with really great histories of service to the state of Utah. And they're appointed by majority and minority leadership. They reflect different parties of our state. And they are also doing a map drawing process. And eventually in early November, they will present 12 maps, 3 of each of 4 kinds of maps, to the Legislative Redistricting Commission or Committee. And our hope is that maybe one of those maps is adopted. And there's some other differences, but that's the basics.
But the issue really is that there will be many, many public hearings. There will be many chances for citizens of the state of Utah to draw maps and submit them to both the commission and the committee. So the committee's a legislature, and they have the ultimate approval for the maps. So that kind of tells the difference between the commission and the committee, but I think I should have probably have given a little bit of a history. You're the 4th executive director, I believe, of Better Boundaries. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so where did you come from? You've only been on the job for what, 6 months?
No, 2.
Two.
Almost 2 months.
Well, it feels like to me 6 months, Katie. Okay.
Is that a compliment? I'm not sure.
Well, it feels like you're already in the job and already have everything going. So
thank you.
The first executive director, well, maybe you could tell all the, give a little shout out
yes,
to all the past
yes.
executive directors.
So our first executive director was Catherine Cantor, and she and a small group of people really sat around a dining room table and said, how could we do redistricting better to give Utahns better representation among their elected officials.
And it was a bipartisan committee.
And it was a bipartisan committee. And the organization is really sort of unique in the state of Utah in that it operates in this bipartisan space. And that is one of our top and most important values and something that attracted me to the position, frankly. And she took it all the way through getting the referendum put on the ballot, getting the ballot passed by Utahns, and it did pass successfully, and then working with the legislature to sort of negotiate what it looks like in practice. And that negotiation took quite a while, and in that time, she took another position with the county, Salt Lake County, and Rebecca Chavez-Houck stepped in to lead the organization, and she finalized the negotiation with the legislators.
It was over 2 sessions.
It
so
was.
They had 2 executive directors that negotiated. Mm-hmm. And then after the final negotiation, it was passed by, and that was no small feat, because the legislature does have ultimate say in redistricting. But I think it's an acknowledgement of, hey, let's see if we can't help the perception that we're not transparent and keep it and make it and try to strive to make it more transparent, make it more trusted by the public if there are those out there who don't believe that the legislature does a fair job. So those first three, or first two, and then
Noah Rosenberg. So he had started as a signature gatherer and became deputy director, and he has really been with the organization from the beginning. He is now off at his first year of law school in Berkeley, but did an excellent job of, you know, pivoting the organization to now how do we make sure that the ideals of, you know, fair representation are actually implemented. So I overlapped it with him for 1 month. I started right after the 4th of July weekend and took over in full at the beginning of August.
I don't think this is the example that anybody wants to live through again of the census and getting the redistricting numbers, because of anybody who's followed this. Because of the year of COVID and because of the Trump administration and redistricting, their kind of pushback on counting and when the numbers were going to be released, and then of course a transition in the presidency, the numbers are coming extremely late to all of the states across the United States. So what would have happened probably in more of like a 9 month, 10 month time frame is being compressed down into probably like 4 months.
Yeah, there's no doubt it's a scramble, and I don't know, you know, there's no other way to slice it except to say that the whole country is scrambling.
Right.
So every year, you know, redistricting is done every 10 years with the new census data, because at its heart, it's about making sure that one person, one vote, that you don't have districts that are, you know, much more populated or districts that are significantly smaller than that they must be balanced across the state so that everyone has an equal amount of representation. So that's a really core tenet. So the census data is important, and the census data didn't come until mid-August. It usually comes in April. Computers and data crunching is such an important part of how redistricting has changed. And I guess I would say it's part of our savior in this moment, because you can take all that data, load it into these, you know, high-tech computer mapping programs and get the data pretty, you know, analyzed quickly. So I guess we're grateful for that.
Yeah, it is the saving. I will tell you that in my early life in politics, I worked for the Weber County Clerk, and in the 1990 redistricting, we were hand drawing and trying to align voting precincts, voting districts with census blocks, because that's how this is all done, is based on at the granular level. It's a census block, and they count that block, and you try to figure out, you try to overlay the current voting district or precinct on top of that census block. And because we're now, you know, so many years later, able to do that electronically, it's been electronic. Like 10 years ago, it was electronic. It was a little more clunky, though. But this cycle of redistricting, it is, you know, the technology has shifted so greatly, and you really can click on a district or a census block and move the line, and it automatically recalculates. But there are many legislative districts who are down 6,000 people, and there are some that are up, you know, 20,000 people. And so back to the, you know, one person, one vote for a legislator to represent adequately their, you know, their area. The idea is that it will come within, and the legislature brags about it was down to one person in the congressional districts. I mean, they had gotten that granular in trying to do that. So what are for those that are kind of nerding out on all of this and geeking out on it, what are the things that make a good redistricting process? I mean, I know the openness and transparency, but, you know, the contiguous nature, lots of people refer to it as the C's in redistricting. So what are some of those things people should look out for that make it a good redistricting map?
Yeah, that's great. So I would start with, you know, first of all maps have to follow the Constitution. So this idea of having minimal variance among the sides of the districts is really critical. And then, of course, there's some constitutional law about making sure that minorities are represented. So those two things must happen every district across the entire country. And then additional considerations are keeping districts compact and contiguous. So you don't want a district that's essentially broken up into two and isolated like little islands in other districts. That really is not something that we do here in the state of Utah. With the independent commission, there's even more seats. So there's a concept of communities of interest, which might mean like, yes, we live in the same city, we live in the same county, but there is this group of us that go across those boundaries who all have a very strong common interest. Maybe it's that our economy is based on agriculture or ranching, or our economy is based on resorts and people coming to visit us, and that's really important. And we need to be, you know, together or have representation that reflects that shared economic interest. So compact, contiguous communities of interest. Another important ones are these concepts of cities and counties. So often cities and counties are split, and sometimes it is unavoidable, but as much as we can keep them together, that helps cities and counties have a shared voice with representation, make decisions with their neighbors, and all of that forms what we view as better, more representative districts.
Yeah, if you for elected officials, although a lot of people say, well, wouldn't it be better if our city had three different representatives? And what that ends up looking like from a practical standpoint is that nobody's looking at. I mean, they represent three different cities, and it makes it impossible for them to focus on what the issues of their city, their constituents. So now you've got constituents of one city in three different legislative districts, and so they're, you know, talking to the representatives, and you never really have a full champion, because let's face it, elected officials have to continue to get reelected if they're going to be called elected officials. So they too would probably like to focus on one city, one county. These guidelines all work out well for them as well to be able to represent. Now, I know that during the grand debate, you wanted to throw something
in.
Well,
I just wanted to share an example of that. So I hired yesterday a great organizer. His name is Kyle, and he's from rural part of central Utah, where he was telling me yesterday that it was very common on the way home from school to have to wait for like a herd of sheep to cross the road. And, you know, that was his growing up, that was his culture and area. Then he moved to attend law school and was living in the avenues, and he had the same representative was covering those two areas. And that is not only a challenge for that elected official who already has a hard job, but is that serving either person? Is it serving the person in the avenues? Is it serving the rancher in central Utah? I would argue no, it's not.
Yeah. I will. You're talking about a United States representative, mm-hmm. Member of Congress. Mm-hmm. This is not an easy job. I mean, redistricting is not an easy task, because as I hear it all the time explained by legislators, I haven't really heard it from any commission members yet, but it's like squeezing a tube of toothpaste. You know, you squeeze in one section and the toothpaste just has to move to another section. And if I were to say who's the group I feel most bad for during redistricting, it is rural Utah, because so much growth has occurred along the Wasatch Front, and we only have four members of Congress, we only have 75 House members, we only have 29 state senators, we only have 15 school board members, and because so much of the growth has occurred along the Wasatch Front, it's going to require, if you're going to spread this out and make every district equal, you know, they'll probably lose some seats in rural Utah, which loses that voice at the legislature. So it's a challenging task.
It is a challenging task. And that's why I think this concept and using ideas of community of interest is so important. And so when you think about rural Utah, of course, not all rural Utah is the same. Not at all. They have their own community of interest within that idea of being rural. And so how can we keep some of them intact so they, you know, they have a voice in that way? And I think that's why the community of interest criteria that the Independent Commission takes into consideration is really important, is to give folks in rural Utah and some other areas a chance at having, you know, a shared voice together.
It's so much attention is focused on the congressional districts. And if I were to say over the years, where has the infighting occurred in politics, it's over congressional districts. I remember Jim Hansen, Congressman Hansen, was so irritated by what they did to his district. He decided that he was going to leave Congress and run for governor. He got that irritated. I'll just show them. I'll come back and run for governor, because he'd always had St. George in his district, and he loved having St. George in his district. He felt like he was a real large voice for them because he was on the Natural Resources Committee and later went on and became the chairman of Natural Resources Committee. And it was always a very conservative. He could always count on all of those votes coming in for him in his district. And so when that got carved out, it was very, very upsetting to him. That's the year he decided to leave Congress. It's redistricting has the potential of bringing out the best in people, and it has the potential of bringing out the absolute purest political, infighting, because at the end of the day, there will be some legislators who end up in the same seat and are going to have to run against each other, or one of them is going to have to leave.
And I think you're making a great argument for the Independent Commission's process, because in the end, districts are deeply personal to legislators, of course.
Right.
And then we task them with drawing the lines. And it's, you know, essentially they're conflicted. They're human beings. They're conflicted. And it's hard to ask anyone to do that. And that's the role of an independent commission, is to sit in a space where it's purposely mixed of different partisan backgrounds. They have a robust criteria that they're following. They're not looking at incumbency, and they can really sort of put aside that consideration and focus on everyday Utahans and what they feel their community is and they feel is good representation. And I think in the end of this is about the fundamentals of a thriving democracy. And, you know, everyone needs to feel like they have a voice and their voice matters and they're well represented. And that means that we have a thriving community, city, state,
well,
country.
And they have to, I think the citizens of the state need to know that they can trust. This is one of the reasons why I was so frustrated this last election, because I had worked in a county clerk's office, and there are approximately 3,000 county clerks across the country that really work hard to make sure that votes are counted accurately. And I really was disappointed in how our national representatives in some cases were undermining the integrity of the election process, and because it doesn't serve anybody to do that. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think this was such a good process for the state to acknowledge and try to embrace this. I don't think we actually mentioned that the chair and the two co-chairs of the legislative committee are Senator Scott Sandel and Representative Paul Ray. And I was joking with somebody the other day and saying, you know, when you're sitting as the chair of this committee, oftentimes you feel like, I feel like we're combining some people, and I just feel like maybe I should be the sacrificial lamb. Maybe I should be, because some of the past chairs of Jerry Adair, for example, who was the chair of the Independent Redistricting Committee for the legislature, not Independent Redistricting, but the Redistricting Committee from the legislature, he gave up his seat during the process. As a matter of fact, I think history shows that the last three House chairs of redistricting actually gave up their seats during the process. So
It's a tough job.
It is a very
if you're working yourself very, out of the job.
Tough job. Well, you start feeling super, super guilty about putting your colleagues through that. What's the I do want to feature, because it is so important, and I really take my hat off to the legislature for taking the job very, very serious in who they appointed to the Independent Redistricting Commission. I think if I were to say that there's one thing that I was probably most pleased with during this process, was that the legislature, in their appointments, the governor in his appointment, really put all stars on the Independent Redistricting Commission. And I, you know, they could have just blown that off. They could have said, we're just going to put, you know, seven political hacks on this committee, this commission, and we're going to completely ignore it. They did not do that. And so just kind of go through the chair and then the two Republicans, the two Democrats, and the you know, the other independents.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up, because it is a feathered Utah's cap. There have been independent commissions in other states who go through this whole process and then essentially put inexperienced people. And that is the opposite of what we have here. We really have some wonderful people. So I'll start from the Republican side of things. We have Rob Bishop and Lyle Hilliard, experienced politicians who have represented our state for, you know, decades, and who have, I think it's really important to note, a lot of experience with redistricting. They know the whole state of Utah like the back of their hand. Mm-hmm. They know the communities. And so they're really adding a lot of lived experience, in addition, of course, to just their political clout.
Former Speaker of the House, former Congressman Rob Bishop, former Speaker of the House, then went on to serve in Congress. Lyle Hilliard, I believe he is the second or third longest serving legislator in the history of the state. Haven Barlow, I know, is number one, and I don't know if Mike Dimitrich is number two and Lyle's number three, but the point is a long track record with redistricting and politics in the state, Republican politics.
Yeah, so then on the Democrat side, we have appointed by the Democrats, I should say, we have Christine Durham and Karen Hale. And so Christine was
former Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court. Amazing. Karen Hale, former state senator, and has kind of devoted her life to politics in the state of Utah, has worked really at every level of government. So those are four kind of, I would say, political titans in the state.
I agree. And then we have two independents. And so we have Jeffrey Baker, who brings a really specific expertise around GIS and mapping. So in the end, this is a technical, you know, endeavor of drawing these maps, as you said, using a lot of data from the census, looking at existing political lines. And Jeff has a ton of experience there and a lot of interest in redistricting.
So just for those four, mm-hmm. the Senate got to appoint one Republican, the Republican caucus, or the president of the Senate appointed one Republican, the Speaker of the House appointed one Republican, the minority leader of the Senate appointed one Democrat, the minority leader of the House appointed one Democrat, and then the governor appointed the chair. So we'll talk about him in a minute, but then there were two others that were appointed that had to be agreed upon. Is that correct?
Yes. And this is all written into state statute from the proposition that was passed.
Right.
Is this very specific way of how the commissioners are appointed, and then how, you know, what their quorum is, what the rules are. And so that's all, you know, law.
In the statute.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I think really, and it's actually such an easy read to read about it. And you read it and you think, okay, this makes sense.
I mean, it's something you just pick up. You'd have on your bedstand at night, Katie, and it's such an easy read.
You
roll over and read, you know, the statute on the Independent Redistricting Commission.
You might. I wouldn't, but I was stepping into this job and thought, I better, I better. And I thought, like, this makes a lot of sense in how it's built. And I will say, and we'll get back to the other commissioners who we haven't gotten to, there's a lot of cohesion among them. So right now, they're actively drawing maps. They have the census data, and they're going to draft a lot of maps and start narrowing them down. And
they've broken
input.
Up into teams is what they decided,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So they have three teams, and they're really careful to make sure, because all of this is done in sunlight, and perception is so important, that those teams reflect different partisans. You know, so there's some Republicans, some Democrats, some independent on each team. And they're churning through maps and creating them. And
but that was actually not in the statute. They got together in their first meeting and decided, hey, what if we did it this way? Which I was actually impressed with that idea, because it's such a hard process. Let's throw as many maps up as we can. So three teams from the independent commission. How were the two independents selected? You know, you mentioned that you have the GIS person who's a specialist in GIS.
And we missed
his name is
Jeffrey Baker. And then we missed Judge Bill Thorne, who was on the Utah State of Appeal Court. Very experienced as well. And, you know, I was saying to him, it's interesting because mapping is a mathematical challenge. And we have a lot of experts in legal law words. And he said, yes, but at the end, it's all about getting to the fundamental root of something and building from there. And I thought, yeah, that's absolutely right in this process. And they're all in that state of mind of how do we get to the most fundamental part of what makes a good map and then build them from there.
And then the person whom I feel the most bad for is the chairman who the governor appoints in the
yes.
law, the governor appoints. And I would imagine when he got this call originally, thought, oh, yeah, sure, I'd be happy to do that. And then we actually have done a feature on him in Utah Political Underground. The people can go read about him. But I think he may have been caught off guard a bit about the number of hours this was going to take.
Yes. So Rex Facer, a BYU professor of political science, he does not seem ruffled at all by the enormity of this job. He's doing an excellent job of playing that chair role, of bringing people together, moving things forward. But when you talk about the time invested, I mean, it is no joke. So they are currently mapping in those small teams, you know, anywhere between 6 to 10. Sometimes they want to go longer and the staff has to kick them out so people can go home and eat dinner and actually get some sleep. And they're just in a room doing the mapping, and then they'll take it on the road. So they have their first public hearing in September 2nd in Monticello. And that's when they'll have some draft maps that people can begin responding to. Of course, they'll focus on, you know, our southeast corner of the state during that, but people can talk about all the different types, you know, all give feedback throughout the process, no matter if the public hearing's in their home county.
So
or not.
One last thing I want to cover, because it's been fascinating and we could go on probably for another hour and a half about it, but the general public can go and draw their own map and submit it to both the committee and the commission. So legislative committee and the independent redistricting commission. So where does the public go to start diving in to draw their own maps?
So this is a great segue into public input. So the Independent Commission's website is uirc.utah.gov. And theirs is a little bit harder to find, so that's why I'm giving the precise domain. And there you can draw either your community of interest, so just talk about, hey, the tie that binds my community is this, and here's how I would draw it. Or you can actually draw whole districts, your congressional district, your state house district, however you'd like. So that is all available directly on their website.
And we will put that, I'll have our associate producer, Stephen Morris, put that in the show notes so that people can go and click on it if they didn't catch it while they were driving someplace.
Yes, great. And then the legislative committee is also taking input, but they are really, so I would say one more thing about the independent commission. You can also just give a, you know, send them an email with some ideas. It doesn't have to be as technical as drawing a map. With the legislative committee, they are also taking input. So both are doing hearings around the state. You can attend, you can tell them what you think. They're really asking people, draw a full map for us and come tell us why your map should be enacted or adopted. And so there's opportunity for people to really dig in and start saying, this is what I think, you know, the Utah map should look like. And so they're both taking public input, different kind of expectations for what that looks like, but certainly your voice can have a role in the process.
And I have heard that 10 years ago that the state school board map was actually drawn by a citizen and submitted, and they adopted essentially what the citizen submitted. Is that, am I making something up, or was that a rumor I heard, or?
That is also the lore that I know. I think it to be fact, but I have not individually verified.
Well, we should just start it right here. Now it's fact.
If you look at the map, it is an interesting map. I mean, the school board map is hard. There's only 15 districts. Those state school board members represent a lot of people. So that presents challenges of these just enormous geographic districts to get the right amount of population. But yes, they did accept that map. I do think with population growth, there can be improvement in this next map. Mm-hmm. But apparently someone in Logan drew it.
Can I tell you something harder than drawing a state school board map?
House.
Serving on the state school board. That's way harder than drawing the map. Okay. All right. Well, Katie, thanks for coming in. Any last words that you want to impart?
So I would encourage people to learn more at our website, betterboundaries.org. You can go there and draw a map as well that we are submitting into the independent commission. So it's a really easy and accessible map drawing tool. And starting next week, I'm going to give recaps of what's going on with the legislative process, what's going on with the independent commission. So anyone who's interested in keeping up to date, also visit our website to listen to those podcast recaps.
That will be awesome, because it is something that people should stay up to speed on. And this will, I think, be the absolute best way to stay up to speed, is to listen to your recaps once, maybe twice, who knows, a week, depending on how things move. But thank you for joining us today, Katie. And this has been another episode of Stokes and Folks. Hopefully you will like us, subscribe, leave us your comments. Even if they're bitter and raw, leave us your comments. And we hope that you'll listen to us again next week on another edition of Stokes and Folks.